This is the Brooklyn Culture Jam, a radio show devoted to culture, politics, and current events here in Brooklyn, the center of the world. I'm your host, Dan Beach. Welcome to the Brooklyn Culture Jammers. This is Dan Kinch. I'm your host. We are a mix of culture, politics, and current events in Brooklyn, which happens to be the center of the universe, even though it's a rather cold center of the universe this evening. Tonight, we are hoping to speak to Danette Chavis. Danette Chavis was with us last year on Sex and Politics. Her son died in NYPD custody about a decade ago, and she has formed the National Association Against Police Brutality. This week, we celebrated the anniversary of the Trayvon Martin killing, which she called attention to. And Annette has done some recent video work regarding Stop and Frisk, the class action suit, Floyd v. City of New York. And we will listen to what constitutes what the NYPD sometimes refers to as testifying. So that's going to be a great show. She's also advising Ramsey Orta. If you don't know, Ramsey Orta is the only person so far who's been charged in the death of Eric Garner, and he wasn't responsible for it. He was just videotaping it. The other news today is that the Justice Department appears not to be ready to pursue civil rights charges in the Eric Garner case, so she will have an opinion on that. We are going to get her on the phone in just a few minutes, and in the meantime, I think we can talk about some other things here. Hold on. In the meantime, as followers of this show might know, we have been longtime friends of Guy McPherson, and Guy McPherson is in town right now, and I will be talking about his events. If you want to know what he's up to, he is on the web at the EmpireBluesMedicineShow.com, and he will be doing events in Chinatown Friday and Saturday. I will have more information about that in just a minute. In the meantime, here's some Neil Young while we wait for Danette Chavis. Welcome back. This is Dan Kinch, and I believe, unless things are terribly wrong, I have Danette Chavis on the line. Are you there? Danette? Danette, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, welcome to the show. Thank you again for coming on.
Sure, thank you for having me.
So, there's a lot on the agenda since we last talked, and I thank you again for agreeing to be here. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, first of all, is that you have made a videotape with testimony excerpts from Stop and Frisk. Let's talk about that a little bit. This is about the case Floyd v. City of New York, and I believe you called it testifying. Fill in my audience what that's about.
That had to do with the class action lawsuit regarding Stop and Frisk. It was a two-part lawsuit. One part dealt with the grievances for the residents of the New York City Housing Authority, and the other part dealt with New York City residents at large. It was two different cases, both class action lawsuits, fighting against the violations of the Stop and Frisk policy.
Explain to my audience a little bit, because there's a question about the constitutionality of Stop and Frisk, is there not?
Yeah. In fact, the courts did rule in favor of the people that Stop and Frisk, in the manner in which it was being carried out by NYPD, did in fact violate the constitutional rights of people as well as racially profiled people of color.
So where's the next step on that? I would assume the government automatically appealed?
Well, what happened was, after the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the people, the Supreme Court also imposed remedies to help end the violations. Some of the remedies was that the precincts that had the highest amounts of arrests underneath the policy were ordered to wear cameras on those officers. And also, it allowed for lawsuits to be filed against police who wrongfully arrested people underneath the policy without cause for arresting them. And then subsequent to that, there was a vote of the city council where they passed the Community Safety Act. So there were several things that were provided as a remedy to end the violations, but the mayor and the commissioner of that time filed an immediate appeal on all of it. So there was a stay on nearly all of the remedies imposed. So then we had a new election for mayor, which was de Blasio. And de Blasio basically ran on a campaign advising that he would end the stops and frisk policy. He did nullify the appeal of the city concerning the case, but he turned around and he reappointed a commissioner over NYPD, who some people say had a lot to do with initiating the stop and frisk policy in the first place.
You're talking about Bratton.
Right. That's Commissioner William Bratton. Now, he's not touting stops and frisk. He came back as commissioner touting the broken window policy. Okay? And some people say that the broken window policy in some ways is worse than stop and frisk, because police had to have a reason to stop you, a reason to suspect you of having committed a crime underneath stops and frisk. But under the broken window policy, people have been arrested for very minor infractions loitering, sleeping on a train, you know, how New Yorkers doze off after they, when they're on their way home from work. People have been directed to get off the train to provide ID to an officer simply because they had nodded off. We have video online of precisely that incident, you know, where a man, a black male, you know, was asked for ID, and he wanted to know why. And they said it's because he's sleeping. And he said, well, I'm tired. I just came home from work. Well, we need to see your ID. Step off the train. Step off the train for what? And then, you know, and a back and forth ensued, and the end result is the man was on the floor inside the train in handcuffs, and he was arrested and taken to jail. So in that regard, so the broken window policy is a little bit more worse than stop and frisk, because officers are stopping people for very simple, minor things. And still, it appears to be people of color.
And you're talking about the remedy for the Floyd v. City of New York being body cameras on the police department. Did I hear you correctly on that?
Not the entire police department. It was those precincts that had the highest amounts of arrests underneath the stop and frisk. It was those precincts that were ordered to wear those cameras.
But many pundits have pointed out that the cameras would have caught the entire incident with Eric Garner, for instance, and that doesn't seem to have made a big difference with the grand jury. What's your take on this?
Well, I agree with that. Okay, I just, in December, myself and nine other mothers across the United States, we went as a delegation to Washington to demand police accountability. We spoke at congressional hearings. We met with staff from the Obama administration, and we held rallies and protests. And one of the issues that I had made mention of is that it's nice that the president offered cameras to be worn, but the failure to indict in the Eric Garner case made those efforts dead in the water, okay, because we saw a man murdered right before our eyes, which was taken on videotape, and those officers were not held accountable for that murder. That death was blamed on the victim himself, and those officers got away scot-free. Meanwhile, the individual who filmed the murder is the one who's been indicted with a crime and is currently right now going through court proceedings because of it.
Yes, I mentioned that at the start of the show, that Ramsey Orta seems to be the only person out of the Eric Garner case who's facing any charges.
That's correct. And there's a total contradiction in that, because the prosecutor's office who has brought these charges against Ramsey Orta is the very same prosecutor who neglected to prosecute those officers in the murder of Eric Garner. Do you understand?
Oh, yeah. No, I understand.
I want your listeners to understand. The same district attorney's office that refused to prosecute police for the murder of Eric Garner is the same prosecutor's office who is now bringing charges against Ramsey Orta, who filmed the murder.
Now, you had mentioned also that you, and maybe I'm getting this wrong, so correct me if I'm wrong, that perhaps Ramsey Orta's family was not getting good advice?
Well, the problem is that the attorney who wanted to represent Ramsey Orta has some issues concerning his ability to practice law in New York City. Ramsey Orta was attempting to exercise his Sixth Amendment right to select the attorney of his choosing. The attorney of his choosing was wrongfully barred from practicing law in New York City.
And that attorney was?
Alton Maddox.
Okay.
Yeah, Alton Maddox was very much in the media several years ago, during the time of the Tawana Brawley case.
Right.
And as a result of that case, there were several legal actions that was imposed upon him. Steve Vernon Mason and Al Sharpton was there in the mix as well. But when you do the research, the legal action that is now against Alton Maddox is in fact illegal. Some of those actions were for a term of 5 years. It's been nearly twice as much as that, and they haven't lifted those sanctions against him. So that is the issue with his ability to be able to represent Ramsey Orta.
Now, one other development that's happened since the last time we talked to you was a settlement, I believe, in the Ramarley Graham case. Is that something you can address, or how does that affect some of the other things that are going on here vis-a-vis the NYPD?
How did the Ramarley Graham settlement affect NYPD?
Well, how has it affected your work? For instance, you are working with the group National Association Against Police Brutality. What was the organizational response to that settlement?
Well, let me say this. The reason that I founded National Action Against Police Brutality is because I've seen that over the years, when individual cases are highlighted in the media, first of all, the majority of them do not get justice. But even in the cases of the ones who do, that justice, in no form or fashion, benefits any of the rest of us. Okay? Police will still murder. Police will still abuse their authority and brutalize. If you have an officer who's accused of murdering an unarmed man, even if he is sentenced to 25 years in prison because of it, that same night, another officer can go out and do the same thing, and we will be right back marching and begging and pleading for justice all over again. So the actions that have been taken in dealing with police brutality and murder, it hasn't really dealt with it on the whole. It has dealt with it in individual cases of murder, the majority of which don't even get anything that resembles justice. Police departments here in New York and across the United States are perfectly willing to pay a settlement to a family to make the case go away. Okay? It's not an admission of guilt. The majority of people don't understand that when a settlement offer is made in court and the family accepts it, it in no form or fashion is an admission of guilt on the part of the police department that the officer committed a crime. Okay? It leaves everything right where you were in the beginning. Okay. Family saying they murdered my child, and the police saying it was justified or that they found no wrongdoing.
Okay, Ms. Chavis, we're just about to wrap up here. I want you to let people know what your website is and what they should be involved in currently, what campaigns you're currently involved in.
Okay, they can contact the organization at NAACP2015@gmail.com, and our official page is located on Facebook. They can Google National Action Against Police Brutality, and when they do, two things will happen. The petition will come up, as well as the Facebook page will come up. Both have the same title, National Action Against Police Brutality. By all means, sign the petition, because we still have an ongoing demand for nationwide justice and progress, and also visit the page. On that page, we keep all information concerning our current actions, things going on here in the city and across the United States, and donate.
Ms. Chavis, thanks once again for joining us. It's always informative. Hope you can be back soon. I hope you don't need to be back soon, and we'll catch up with you later. Thanks.
Thank you. Good night.
And that wraps it up here for the Brooklyn Culture Jam. Thanks for joining in on our first inaugural broadcast. This is Dan Kinch. I'm going to play you out now, I think, with a few more moments of Neil Young. In the meantime, as you're listening, I want to tell you that our friend Guy McPherson is in town. You can find out about his Empire Blues Medicine Show at his website, empirebluesmedicineshow.com. He has two lectures coming up. This is Dan Kinch. Thanks for listening.